Bust the bubble.
Yes. Welcome to Burst the Bubble on CamFM. I'm Michael Quintario.
And I'm Chris Smoten.
And we're going to be looking at the more unusual news stories from the past week, talking about them, and hopefully getting comments from you as well on them. And
if you're feeling generous.
If you're feeling generous, yeah. Getting involved is not obligatory, but it is encouraged.
Well, I'm considering making it obligatory. Let's put my radio pronunciation on.
Basically, Chris will try and find out who's been listening and not actually telling us stuff, and he'll cry a bit, I think.
And, yeah, I'll go around Churchill, maybe with a big knife, sort of going, "You there, comment." And he'll say, "Ah," and I'll say, that's a valid comment.
I feel, given the Twitter joke trial that happened recently, we should point out that all suggestions that Chris might actually go around threatening people with a knife are purely for comedic effect.
Everything I say is false, including this statement.
Oh, no.
Fear.
And that's the one thing that our courts can't cope with. Logical problems.
Paradox.
Paradox.
You raise paradox in the High Court, the High Court just sort of collapses into a sort of event horizon kind of situation.
So you destroy the entire world in a sort of black hole situation.
I don't know about the entire, I mean, it's really, really just the... Really just the court, you know. I mean, nothing against the world, but if there's one thing I hate, it's justice.
moving swiftly on to our first story of the week.
We yes.
Which is actually another heartwarming story. We seem to have been doing quite well for all these heartwarming stories recently, yeah, which is nice considering the weather has been the opposite of warming.
I think my conspiracy theory from a few weeks ago about adorable news being generated by the forces of darkness is clearly being substantiated here.
We're just going further and further towards the doom of the entire world.
Yeah,
because nice stories like this. Three teenagers who were rescued after 50 days drift in a small boat in the Pacific Ocean, apparently surviving on coconuts and a seagull that they managed to catch.
Right, yeah, yeah.
They had coconuts and rainwater for most of the days as well.
Yeah, it was really impressive. I'd have thought you'd certain to die if you sit in a boat 50 days. No, it turns out you could just catch rain by night, drink it by day. It turns out to be all right. Managed to catch a seagull at one point, which seems improbable. You know,
I finally just grabbed it. It just perched on the boat. Perhaps
just sitting there.
Perhaps it was just being really, really quiet and still. I mean, if you're stuck on a boat, I mean, there's not a lot you're going to be doing. You're not exactly going to be dancing the Macarena. So
I'm alarmed to find that they didn't consider the James and the Giant Peach solution. Is that they could have snagged the seagull and then gone, "Go on, boy, tow us to land," and the seagull would have gone, "What? I'm tied to a boat." Fly in panicked fashion in circles. Before you know it, you could just, like, it's tied a double half hitch.
A double half hitch?
A double half hitch, or a hitch, as it is often known.
Oh, dear.
I'll be honest, I never went to Boy Scouts.
I did. They don't like going to Boy Scouts anymore because girls can go as well.
Ah, okay, well.
There you go.
But the important question here is, what knot would a seagull tie? If you tie a line to a seagull and then panic the seagull by tying a line to it, what knot is it most likely to fabricate?
I think it wouldn't tie a knot so much as just tangle itself up. That's not an actual knot. That's just a mess.
I think we should name it. Yeah, that's
the seagull knot.
The bemused gull tangle.
That sounds like a dance move. Everybody get down, do the bemused gull tangle. a new craze sweeping Cambridge nightclubs.
Let's absolutely definitely not get down and do the bemused gull tangle, but I do like the idea.
There's a really sad bit in the news story that they actually saw some boats at night where they could see all the lights of it, but it was just so far away, and they obviously weren't a giant boat with lights.
So it
didn't notice them.
It's a challenge. Yeah, there needs to be more of an international distress protocol along the lines of going, "Oi, you!" I don't know why you'd do it like a little bit like a comedy Scotsman, but that's written into the protocol. You have to adopt the voice of a comedy Scotsman and say, "Oi, you there?" And they go, "That's not comedy Scotsman, I refuse to pay attention."
Also, I think actually what they probably go is, They'd probably just carry on because they wouldn't have heard you. Is the crucial
that
thing.
Is also an issue.
You'd
yeah.
have to be a comedy Scotsman with a megaphone.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah, more megaphones. More megaphones on boats.
But I like how they got the fish that they were surviving on, the raw fish. We ate flying fish, very small ones that jump into the boat, about yeah, 5 inches, said Edward, one of the boys who's involved.
This is related to my conspiracy theory that this is adorable news to distract us from the secret machinations of the world government, because fish jumping into... I mean, okay, so...
You've not seen salmon jumping up, like, weirs.
Yeah, they jump up waterfalls and so on, but, I mean, these guys are in the sea. There aren't any waterfalls. It's the sea. It's
about as flat as you can get.
What they've done here, they've adopted the fishing protocol pioneered by Strongbad, and that's never a good approach. You know, you don't want to imagine some New Zealanders awash in the Pacific Ocean going, come on, get in the boat. Come on, get in the boat. Fish, fish. You know, that doesn't work.
And I'm just bemused by the fact that it... blatantly did work. they survived because fish threw themselves at them. Perhaps they were just really attractive to the fish.
Oh yeah, or the fish were feeling merciful. The fish, you know, nobody's writing the fish's side of the story here. That they were swimming by the boat and went, poor old humans. You know, we acknowledge our inferior position in this world. Yeah. You know, so
we've got nothing to live for, but they have.
Let's hurl ourselves to our deaths. And yeah. Suicidal fish is what we have to thank for this story.
and then in a continuation of the fish theme, which is unsurprising seeing as they were at sea, they were picked up by a tuna fishing boat, having drifted more than 1,300 kilometres from where they started.
So that seems more reasonable. Whereas if they were picked up by a fish after having caught a series of tuna fishing boats, I'd be more suspicious about the matter.
They were given intravenous drips and... we're asking for fruit pretty quickly. I'm not sure whether that was a case of going, please, please, just take this needle out of my arm. I want some actual food.
And jam a lemon in there. Sharpen up a lemon. Stab it into my veins. You know, that's the kind of delirium that can result from having spent quite a long time at sea.
50 days. People seem to be surviving long things quite well.
Yeah, on the news, they actually referenced a Chinese sailor who successfully survived for 120 days, or something. Whoa. Around that, which is pretty impressive. That turned out to be after a yacht torpedoed by the Germans, so, you know.
Oh, yeah, a Chinese sailor who is thought to hold the record for survival at sea, 133 days in the South Atlantic after he was on the British merchant ship he was on, was torpedoed by a German U-boat.
Yeah, yeah. We airbrush over the fact that the British Empire had compelled him to be there against his will. damn those pesky Germans.
But commenting on a news story from 1942.
Cutting political satire here. Curse you, British Empire. And also, I don't think much of Weimar.
If you've got any stories about mishaps in boats that you'd like to share with us, or in fact tips, if you'd like to share your tips for surviving long amounts of time at sea,
or if you want to rebut my views about the Weimar Republic,
if you want to tell Chris that he's talking complete rubbish as well, you can email us studio@camfm.co.uk. you can ring us 01223 850 247. You can go onto our website, www.camfm.co.uk, and click on the web form. And also, you can text us, which is very exciting. That text message has to start with the word studio, and that's 07786 20 24 30. So that's 07786 20 24 30.
The sheer number of ways to contact us is bewildering. There is just no excuse not to. But first, some music.
97.2 camfm.co.uk.
On air and online, you're Cam FM.
That was The Best of You by the Foo Fighters, and you're listening to Burst the Bowl, a song about insignificant news and the talking thereof.
Speaking of insignificant news, we've got a couple of stories now to do with cash, basically, and large sums of money. And the first one just entirely bemused me when I heard about it, because it just seems so far out of my experience, but possibly not out of the experience of some graduates of Cambridge. Because a man apparently had £80,000 cash, and he accidentally managed to leave it on the roof of his car. and then drove off.
Right.
So the, then he realised at the other end, and the cash wasn't there.
If you ask me, this is some very inept fishing of the police lost property basket. This is a guy with 80 grand in the hole, and he's sort of gone, well, okay, they're going to break my thumbs, they're going to take my legs, whichever one of those makes any sense. So I desperately need 80 grand. Perhaps I'll phone the police and say, have you seen 80 grand lately? I'd better make it a bit more specific than that, because otherwise I'm just phoning them and saying, do you have money? I've lost money. Mm-hmm. So he said, oh yeah, I left it on the roof of my car, i.e. I could have deposited it anywhere in the country.
It's actually in a specific place. It was last Thursday in last Thursday, it was actually last Thursday, in Westcliff-on-Sea in Essex.
Yeah.
Officers said the cash had vanished, which is frankly unsurprising, and they are treating the incident as theft. Because, weird thing, if you find some money lying around and you pick it up, apparently you're supposed to take it to the police, and if you don't, it's theft.
You're obliged to stand there and go, anybody lost 80 grand?
Anybody?
No.
All of you? All of you? It can't be all of you.
You've got to keep quite quiet.
It's like, whisper it. Has anyone lost 80 grand?
As it turns out,
where's mine?
As it turns out, still everybody present has lost 80 grand, and so you just nick off with it.
There's a great description of it. The money was left by an elderly man in an orange plastic bag inside a blue pull string bag. And then just reading orange plastic bag, it just makes me think, what was he doing with 80 grand inside one of those recyclable Sainsbury's bags?
It's a Sainsbury's bag,
blatantly.
The blue pull string is probably not a supermarket. Unless Waitrose had gone really upmarket. I don't know what he's done there. He's gone to Sainsbury's and gone, I mustn't let people see. Go to Waitrose and get one of their bags.
I mean, who would think that you had 80 grand inside a supermarket plastic bag? I mean, traditionally, carrying that sort of money, you should have a briefcase. You should be wearing sunglasses and a suit.
Well, you could have a bag marked swag.
That's your option.
That also works, but you are quite likely to be murdered, which is one of the... Sainsbury's bag is probably about the right area, because very few people go, could be a pizza. Could be 80k. Let's stab that guy in the face and see what comes out. Turns out what comes out is 80 grand. In this case, usually it's pizza, and you feel quite bad having murdered a man for a pizza.
Unless it's your favourite pizza, in which case you feel slightly less bad.
Was ever so slightly, yeah, on the grand scale of matters, there's a way out here, as I mime here, way out in radio mime land, is the level of bad you feel for killing one of your fellow humans. And then just ever so slightly this way is how bad you feel when you've murdered him, and there turned out to be a pepperoni pizza in there.
There we have Chris running against the limitations of this medium. But I'm just trying to wonder what sort of person forgets that they've got a bag with 80 grand in it and they've left it on the roof of their car.
A person with lots of bags of 80 grand, I suppose. I don't know, what would make you have lots of money?
Lots of bags of money, I don't know.
There's probably some really lazy banking satire in here somewhere. He was sort of, humming and hawing his way out of Barclays with a whole lot of 80k sacks, and he sort of went, 1, 2, yes, I think that's all of them. I'll wind my moustache before I jump in the car.
Before I go and kick this puppy, which is sat...
Yes.
Whimpering pitifully next to my car.
Now then, it's time to go peasant shooting.
We're not implying that that's actually this man, but we're just trying to... We really are struggling. If you've got any ideas what sort of person might actually have 80 grand in a plastic bag inside a blue pull-string bag, I think we've kind of missed out the... blue pull-string bag. If anyone's got any idea what the blue pull-string bag could be, what relevance it has, that's something else. You can email us, studio@camfm.co.uk, or text message, sticking studio at the start of your message to 07786 202430. But there are a couple more money-based stories in the news this week. There's also the world's priciest home in India, which perhaps at £80,000 was just a 1% of the deposit on, perhaps, because reports suggest that the residence, the 27-storey building, which is said to have a helipad, a cinema, and a temple, so all mod cons there, is worth more than £1 billion. Oh, sorry, $1 billion, £630 million. Mustn't get the obscene sums of money wrong there by going into the wrong currency.
It is quite a thing. But what he's done here is he's built a hotel of which he is the one and only guest. And apparently it's staffed by 600 people, which is probably more than your average hotel. In fact, to keep his temple and his cinema and so on all going along. But the main problem is that if you look at the picture,
it's horrible.
It looks as though it's been built sort of
a bit haphazardly,
right?
Yeah,
it's
sort of just gone, let's stick. Oh, we've got a kind of like bungalow here. Let's stick that on. It's a bit of a decrepit bungalow.
Yeah, every time he found another million down the back of the sofa, he chucked on another addition to either the designs or maybe the actual thing. You know, maybe they built a cinema off-site and then just came and sort of lowered it into place on top of it. And sort of like Lego, you know, actual Lego.
But the thing is, it looks like. Okay, some of the floors seem to be the same size, but then some seem to stick out a bit, some seem to not really be so much an actual building, apart from just a couple of bits of wood.
Which is always the way with Lego. You can never find something of quite the right size. And so you do always end up with this sort of slightly weird hodgepodge. And it's clearly what's happened here. You know, he didn't want to have a temple, but a temple brick was all he could find. It's like, well, I suppose I'll get to worshipping God, or gods, depending on individual taste. I think it does actually mention somewhere what his temple was too, but I don't want to try and pronounce it in case I'm murdered.
Krishna temple.
There you go.
It says, someone's quoted been said, there's a lot of marble, there's a lot of mother of pearl, which entirely is not visible at all from this picture. I'm beginning to wonder.
You don't build the outside of the building out of marble. That'd be just weird.
I'm beginning to wonder. It claims to be the actual... actual picture of the things in Mumbai.
It wasn't just a photo of Mumbai where they went, look at this building, this is ridiculous. In other news, another better building has been built across town.
And so someone's trying to compare it to the Taj Mahal, and I really can't see it going on postcards.
Oh, that's very easy. The Taj Mahal is the Taj Mahal, and this isn't.
That's a very easy. That would be a worst exam question ever. Compare and contrast the Taj Mahal and this building.
Contrast. The Taj Mahalness of the Taj Mahal dramatically exceeds the Taj Mahalness of this thing, and contrary for the this thingness of both .. write your own trailing off sort of not having much of an idea here.
I like the fact here that he had a housewarming party, Indian billionaire Mukesh Ambani, and then there's a little bit further down the news story, there's the fact that his brother, Anil, held a parallel party at the only 14-storey residence which houses the rest of the family.
Yeah, it's a rival party, is it?
Yeah, so that's sad. I mean, you may be a master $27 billion, £17 billion fortune, but...
You can only hope that at the end of this massive parallel parties that they all went down to the streets and had a dance off. You know, so Bollywood is no exaggeration. That's actually how it happens.
I'd like to think that hopefully they will stop like comparing who's got the most stories on their house and just come together in brotherly love. I think that would be a nice ending to the story.
That's your after school special conclusion to this.
That's my sort of Christmas Carol style.
If only we could just love each other a little bit. Maybe we wouldn't need massive houses that look like they've been constructed by a blind person.
Ghosts of Christmas past perhaps might now have a target to visit.
But they'll never be able to find him. He's somewhere in there, but the ghost of Christmas past will spend until next Christmas searching.
Yeah. You have to dodge the 600 members of staff to find the one person who...
the ghosts of the 700 peasants who died in its construction who are kind of fighting for space. Oh. I don't know if it actually was built in the manner of the Egyptian pyramids, but it would seem only appropriate. It didn't actually kill any peasants in the process, but it's kind of one of the things your big house has got to have, so you just had a bit of a slaughter.
That's awful. That really is.
I'm
awful.
Determined to undermine your after-school special thing here.
Yeah, it's kind of like, it's been described as one of the wonders of the world, and what the one of the guests has described it as, a guest at this party. So yeah, the pyramid thing might hold up there, but I really don't like it. So how do you feel? Email us studio@camfm.co.uk.
Do you hate rich people? Do you hate peasants? Let us know. And now some more of that music stuff we keep putting in here.
Your city,
your station,
your Cam FM.
That was You Really Got Me by The Kinks, and you are still listening to Burst the Bubble.
Live on Cam FM.
With me, Chris Smoten, and...
you just kind of like gestured over at me there, and I'm Michael Quinteria.
You shattered the illusion there. Could have looked like we were so professional, you know, we knew what we were doing. Oh well, let's continue with that illusion with our next story. This is a story all about Polmont,
yeah,
Polmont prison.
Polmont.
I was a little bit worried it might be a Welsh word or something, and you know, I'd have just offended everybody again. But whatever. Anyway, yes, point being, Polmont prison, which exists, is a place where they rehabilitate prisoners, as is the definition of prison. But enough of the dictionary. This is a place where they've decided that what would rehabilitate evil humans.
Evil is pushing it a bit. I'm being really mean.
I avoid offending the Welsh, but I've stumbled over the philosophy of rehabilitation. Curses.
but they have paired up young male inmates with dogs with behavioural problems, so that in training the dog, they can find their own sense of self-worth and become a better person.
Yeah, essentially, yeah, the dog, you know, the dog and the human are both supposed to look at each other and go, oh my, you know, he's having a rubbish time, everybody hates him, maybe I should be more like the dog, or human, less like the dog or the human, I suppose.
Perhaps I really, like, ought to think about what I'm doing a bit more, maybe.
Corrects them both, you know, the human's supposed to stop killing, and the dog is supposed to stop eating things he oughtn't to, you know, carpets, whatever it is dogs do to end up in this situation.
I think you've got a sort of twisted view of the prison population here. It's like all evil murderers when
misbehaved dog population consists entirely of people who befoul the rug.
Now you're calling dogs people.
Yeah,
that's precisely what they say as well.
Individuals who befoul the rug. Of both kinds, perhaps we could pair them up. You know, humans who befoul rugs could be met by dogs that eat people.
I like the fact that it's just reminding me a bit of something like the talent shows on TV where they pair up, the new people with mentors. So they're doing that with the dogs and the inmates, and so perhaps the dogs get interviewed towards the end, and their barking can roughly be translated in as, "I've come on a journey. It's been really good, and if I really, really, really want to graduate from dog training school."
You're gonna do Britain's Got, I don't know, Britain's Got Pointy Teeth, or what, I don't know, what do you call a talent show for dogs that kill people?
Extreme death match crufts.
But okay, so I'll tell you about this story. My chief worry with respect to this one is that what we've got here is we have humans training dogs, stroke dogs training humans to the betterment of both. Yeah. But what's clearly going to happen, if you're a person in prison and you're given a dog, you are going to train that dog to break you out of prison. That's basically what you're going to do. You're going to train. First of all, you're going to train him so that he stops eating people, because then they'll let him out into the, you know, into the natural world, or wherever it is you let retrained dogs out to. Probably loving homes rather than the natural world. But anyway, you let them out in some manner, and then his task, of course, then is to go and break you out. You're going to train him in the subtle arts of sneaking through the prison ventilation ducts and baking
cakes with files in.
Yeah, you know, maybe biting the guard in the bum so that he sort of goes, I might have bum rabies.
I actually worked as a postman for a while, and on cartoons you get dogs who chase after postmen and attempt to bite them in the backside, and I thought for ages this was something that was just made up. for the cartoons.
All right, and you did actually get bitten in the arse a couple of times.
Not quite. I managed to avoid it, but they wanted to. You could tell they were actually coming for me. And you get these little tiny ones, these little tiny balls of fur.
You could read them thinking, so you know, I like post, but what I like all the more is the biting of backsides.
No, but when you tried to put the post through the door, they would launch themselves at the door, and so you'd end up with the post half through. You quickly letting go of the post, and then the post wedged half. Halfway through the door with this little dog dangling from the other side of it.
So, they're really the authors of their own demise at that point, aren't they?
When they fall, they actually have to let go from biting the post and fall off. I like to think that sometimes their owners found them like that, just dangling off the post for hours. Let owners came and picked up the post.
It's exactly that kind of skill which is going to enable them to break their masters out of jail. And you know, we are going to find that Jim the murderer is on the loose again, you know, because his sort of his little proto lassie who he's trained up here has successfully gnawed his way through the wall.
Surely it'd be like an anti-lassie.
Shawshank style.
Surely it'd be an anti-lassie if they're breaking criminals out.
I suppose so. Yeah. Although you know
the kind of dogs who push Timmy down a well. perhaps that's what the behavioural difficulties are.
Yeah. Maybe you don't actually teach the dog to break you out. You teach him how to commit crimes by proxy. So you teach him how to nick VCRs. You know, to
VCRs. What decade are you living in?
In my house, where I have a trusty 80s VCR still whirring away, doing nothing in particular. Yeah, you can teach the dog to, you know, bust in the window, grab the VCR with its teeth. Tow it after him down the road, you know. And also, the police never take it seriously if you phone them and say, you know, Auntie Lassie has showed up and doesn't nick my VCR and is running off down the high street.
Dog's not wired my car.
That probably need a team of three or four dogs.
And he's just the dogs are just going down the motorway with one of them sticking their head out the window.
That's for the more dedicated prisoner who can construct a sort of a mental model of a car and, you know, teach them how to use the clutch and so on.
To be fair, I'd be quite impressed with anyone who could train dogs to that level.
Yeah, you probably only get to see one dog at a time as well, so you'd be very much, the prisoner would be miming the idea to the dog that he has trained other previous dogs about how to use the gear stick. And so this guy's duty is the clutch. Yeah.
And I suppose when the young offender actually gets out, then they'll have a job that they can walk into, just doing training dogs for stunts for Hollywood movies. But actually, the brilliant thing about this is that in this dog training, they've actually monitored 100 men who've been involved with this sort of thing. 100 men who were in young offenders institutions and were involved in this had to retrain dogs. And over 10 years, and none of them had reoffended.
Ah, see, here you've stumbled over my other grumble on the matter of the story, which is, okay, so we got two facts here. Number one, we got exactly one fact and two problems. The fact is...
They're just not being caught.
God damn. I'm just going to start this sentence again. The problem is that none of our guys who were training dogs have reoffended, as compared to our guys who weren't training dogs. However, number one, when you go to assign the dogs to prisoners, you're not sort of going to go, there's baby-eating Jim. You know, I'm sure baby-eating doesn't transfer to dog-eating. It will be perfectly safe to give him little mittens here. And my little mittens is obviously quite a savage mittens and ill-treated mittens, but nonetheless mittens. You're not going to give it to baby-eating Jim. You're going to give it to larcenous Jim. You know, the Jim whose crimes are cold and calculated and cunning. Because cold and calculated and cunning people don't eat dogs for fun. Whereas Jim the baby-eater is quite liable to do so. Problem number two is the fact that your guys who haven't reoffended because you've sent a research crew around following them about. So you're sort of sat there going, I sure would like to commit larceny again. And the researcher will sort of go, pardon? And he goes, yes. I was saying, I very much like Larson Jim.
My dog,
yes. I think I got away with that one.
I think you're being too cynical here. I think they've done things a bit more than that, rather than just going, we'll give dogs to 100 men who are least likely to be caught at it again. And
is this the milk of human kindness again? you will persist in telling us that exists.
The dogs lead the programs ready to be great pets, while their trainers re-enter the community with new job and personal skills, as well as increased compassion. That's a big aww moment there. I think that's nice.
Perhaps bullies in school should be given misbehaving puppies. he's gone a mock in the sock drawer again. A mock is a euphemism, obviously. So we're gonna give him to, you know, Bruiser Billy.
I like how in your world everyone is just nickname. So it's kind of like, Bruiser Billy, baby eating Jim.
It's one big family.
Just gonna imagine, always is there like surprisingly dour Sally also in there as well? Is it in this world of yours?
And when they name children, you know, it's kind of you know what they're gonna be, because you know, so darling. I don't know, Janie the think of an adjective beginning with J.
Jealous.
There you go. Janie the jealous. My wife, Janie the jealous, who requires me to always, you know.
You changed it around. It should be jealous Janie. It's not X the Y.
It's the regal form of address. you come to name your son, and it's like, we're going to call him Dennis the Detonator. It's like, oh, must we?
Menace would be more traditional.
The house isn't going to last. You know, why can't we call him Dennis the Doleful? You know, Dennis the Dower.
Well, if you've got any comments on any of the stories that we've been speaking about so far, you can email us, studio@chemfm.co.uk. You can ring us on 01223, which is a Cambridge area code, 850-247. Or you can text us. Your text must contain studio and then your message, going to 07786 20 2430.
We'll be back right after this.
97.2
CamFM.co.uk.
Your station.
Your CamFM.
That was All Along the Watchtower by Jimi Hendrix. The Jimi Hendrix Experience, in fact. Yeah, incorrect attribution. Yes. Anyway, yes, you're listening to Burst the Bubble on CamFM, a story about insignificant news and waffling about it. You're here with me, Christopher Smoten, and my good friend Michael Conterio, and we're talking about newsy-typey things.
So, yeah, next story that we're going to talk about now is a woman who was trapped for 20 days in her bathroom after the door lock jammed.
Yes, a tragic story, this one. Yes, it turns out she'd presumably gone in there to do things that you do in the bathroom. And then, they say the door lock jammed, but that seems a bit weird. But we'll get back to that anyway.
Have you never, like, been stuck in a cubicle and just had gone, oh, this is really, not, really stiff.
Not in a really insurmountable, oh, God, I'm going to die here.
If we take a normal distribution on how hard it is to Jimmy open the door.
I suppose it's got to happen somewhere, yes. Yeah. There's one person who is fatally entrapped by their bathroom.
Yeah, there's all the people who can get out easily, some who like have to rattle about for a bit, and then this poor 69-year-old.
Poor lady. But it turns out her solution was, what I'm going to do is, well, I've got drinking water in here, obviously, so I'm good for a little while. So during the night, I'm going to whack on the pipes as hard as I can.
To attract attention.
And hopefully that will make my neighbours go, oh my, little Timmy is trapped down the well. I mean, somebody's stuck in the bathroom. Let's go find them. It turns out, no, what they thought is that some obnoxious soul is
doing DIY.
Is doing DIY next door. So at this point, of course, what do you do if your neighbour is doing DIY? You don't want to. You go next door, you knock on the door, you say, stop doing DIY, for God's sake. I try to sleep. My children need snooze.
That's showing just quite how sleep deprived they've been by knocking. their skills have their grammar skills have deteriorated to such an extent.
I found myself heading towards my children need wine, but I'm not. Oh, it's set in France. That's just cheap satire. Was just kind of happening in my subconscious. That's terrible.
That's not satire. That's just cheap.
Cheapness. Yeah, ness. I hate ness. Anyway, but yes, what you should do is go next door and go, my children need wine. I mean, snooze. Shut up. It turns out they organised a petition,
because that's what happens in France. They seem to have a much more proactive sort of style of like complaining, whereas we'll just grumble about this. They'll have they'll have massive riots and petitions.
Hang on, no, this is positively English, isn't it? Because, you know, like a true Frenchman would have just smashed the door down and said, "Zut alors," you know, "Qu'est-ce que c'est le DIY?" And they'd have said, "What sort of stupid stereotype is that?" And it's, I do not know my own nationality that well. Shut up, you pig dog, and cease to hammer. But no, they organised a petition. Presumably they were going to post it politely through the letterbox, and she'd sort of go, "Still dying, well, hammering."
Eventually, like 3 weeks later, almost, people realised that they hadn't seen this pensioner around for a while.
Yeah, just after a while, you know. That's after the second petition a couple of weeks later, this time footed with the words, "We mean it." And, a couple of weeks later, the mayor has moved that she officially sucks. and then finally, they sort of go, "None of this seems to be getting through. Why don't we knock on the door?"
I'm used by it says that she survived on warm tap water for the 20 days. Was there not a cold water tap?
Well, yes, but warm tap water is slightly superior.
I don't understand.
You can extract minerals from it. That pigeon that died in the hot water tank 20 years ago. You know, that's going to supply you with precious proteins.
She obviously had more problems because she didn't have fish that were, like, jumping down her pipes into her bathroom to save her. So go back to referencing back to the earlier story.
It is slightly surreal, man. It's the haunted hot water tank that occasionally generates flying fish. So nobody's sure where in the heck they're coming from. But every now and then you turn on the tap and it goes, "A fish." It happened again. Supernatural fish.
I also like the fact that it just reminded me of the song, "If I Had a Hammer, I'd Hammer in the Morning." But it doesn't say "I'd Hammer at Night." So obviously that's why they are complaining. If you've been hammering in the morning, the evening, and in fact all over that land.
In this case, it's "If I Had a Salmon, I'd Salmon in the Morning."
That doesn't work.
"And Salmon in the Evening."
Salmon is not a verb.
That's the kind of delirium that sets in when you've been locked in your bathroom for 20 days.
There we go. There was a happy ending to the story in that she was found not dead.
Yes. A lot of people not dying this week.
You're sounding disappointed.
It's possible. Perhaps
okay,
it's that.
Look, you want people dying, North and South Korea are attacking each other. That's
there we
depressing.
Go. Yeah. Go, forces of military doom.
But we're not going to talk about that because we're supposed to be a happy radio show, not one that makes you want to hide in a nuclear bunker, much as the studio is like, as has been mentioned many times before.
So is it written into our charter that we have to be a minimum amount of uplifting? If the news 1 week was the apocalypse, would you have to go on the bright side? Gas bills will be down because it's all gone, along with all of the infrastructure and the country, except for us, apparently. You know, the
Cam FM bunker
was the one thing well constructed enough. So we're just sat here broadcasting using an old can opener. Can opener?
You mean two cans and a piece of string? Is that what you were going for?
But somehow I ended up using a can opener to transmit radio. Maybe in the manner of Morse, you know, I was knocking it together to
click,
form Morse.
Click, click, click. Click, click, click.
Yeah, exactly.
Just
nonsensical Morse whenever I open a
SOS.
Can of beans.
Oh, dear, no. But
just a guy at the other end sort of going, he says, "Send help." And then I think he opened a can of tuna and then "send help" again. But then he opened another can of tuna. So he's good for tuna, so the heck with that guy.
That's our plan for communication after the apocalypse.
Tuna and not dying.
We've got a couple more stories that we're going to summarize in a moment and to round up. But
first of all, should we have some more music?
Yeah, some Blur.
Alrighty then. Some Blur it is.
Your city,
your station,
your Cambridge,
your Cam FM.
This is Burst the Bubble on Cam FM, and we're just going to end up with a roundup of a couple more news stories that we found interesting, but not interesting enough to talk about for more than a very short while.
So here's our anthology of marginal interest.
We should make that a feature.
It's not as bad as it sounds.
Anthology of marginal interest.
I say keep listening. Start listening. Oh, whatever.
Okay, so...
Let's start the anthology.
And milk from Clone Castle is safe to eat. The advisory committee on novel foods and processes has...
It was really only two things about this story. Number one is, first of all, a cheap swipe at those people who tell us that clone meat is evil, because creating life is evil. because who does all the creating life in the views of the kind of people who hold these... Oh, that's right, God. So it basically does seem as though they're sort of like, you know, sort of... unless they're saying that God is pure evil for all this life creating, if they've been kind of just kind of regretting all this life creating that's gone on, and they're so I wish we couldn't have any more. So
just like stereotyping all the people who hold one particular view there.
Yes,
that's very nice,
yes.
Chris.
And anti-cloning protesters, of which, you know, very very few are likely to be listening at this particular moment. But if you are, then I don't like you. anyway.
I think Chris is actually secretly a clone. So he's emerged from some sort of horrible lab. I don't know why it's a horrible lab. I'm just finding it to be a horrible lab.
And there's one of me.
Well, that's because you did in all the other clones.
That was really pointless. I cloned myself and I stabbed the other one, so I might not have bothered. I just thought I'd get a bit of evil life creation in.
But there you go. Some cloned... meat and milk from clone cattle. So if you accident, there's some got into the food chain in this country recently, so you don't have to worry that you might have eaten it.
Now you can eat it, yes.
3D models of famous landmarks such as Rome's Colosseum have been recreated using millions of pictures from photo sharing websites.
Ah, yes. Now, yes, this is a fascinating piece of technology, actually. You take a massive corpus of photographs and then you use some cunning techniques to stitch them together into one big cohesive 3D image of the place. So usually they use Flickr or something, and they use all the photos tagged after some
Rome.
Particular time or place. So, yeah, in this place.
Rome.
In this case, Rome, yes. The 18th century was done once. That wasn't very good. but yeah, they've let this software loose and thus produced a 3D model of all of Rome. But it seems to me that what's going to happen now is people are going to troll. You know, people are going to put photos on Flickr tagged Rome, which is actually just a picture of them with, like, you know, a massive blue bouncy castle in the background. Next to a crude sketch of the Parthenon, and then you'll find that the photo stitching software puts the bouncy castle in wherever the Parthenon is, and so it'll crop up in the model. There'll be just thousands of people with little signs saying, "Hello, Mum."
The Parthenon's not in Rome.
Oh, really? No.
I'm pretty sure it's not. I may be wrong there.
Oh, yeah.
In the Colosseum. Parthenon's...
Ancient civilizations. They're all more or less the same.
Yeah, they're all ancient.
Those pointy horned helmets that are all wearing, they're rubbish.
But I like this, but it's just going to be a case of... I'm not entirely sure why. It's going to, like... Well, we'll just go there, and there's a 3D model
just
right there.
I can see no reason why one would look at a picture of Rome rather than going to Rome.
All roads lead there, yeah.
You accuse me of having a go at the poor people who think that cloning is evil.
You need a super fast PC for this.
What about
a super fast PC?
Well, you need a PC to generate the image. You can view it using any old PC. What about the peasants? Yeah, they got their rubbish old netbooks from back from Ort 6 and... what are they going to do? They can't go to Rome.
They can look at the combined. They can feel jealous as they look at something created by millions of other people's holidays.
Ryanair just isn't within the reach of the common man. You got to reach out to people here. What happened to that milk of human kindness you like so much?
Speaking of reaching out, McDonald's is launching its own degree course in business management for its restaurant bosses in the UK.
Yes, indeed. I just hope that they don't label it as such. You know, if you're an employer sat there sort of going, what degrees have we got here? BA, you know, MSci, MA.
Ooh,
MA can't have, but you know, that means they've lived for 3 years. So careful of that one. And in this case, yeah, you've got Master of Burgers. You know,
it's business management, but I'm just amused at the idea that...
Brackets burgers.
The degree that you might get at the end of it might be a MUCD. have your list of things, PSI, MA, MUCD. Yeah.
And even if it is actually quite well disguised, people are going to learn what one might be the McDonald's thing and then just, like, you know, suspend you upside down in the interview room, sort of going, spill it, tell us the truth, was it a McDonald's degree? And you'll be like, no, I swear I've never seen a Big Mac, nor have I seen the special sauce or the gherkins. And they'll go, aha, he knows. I thought, he knows the Big Mac recipe. He has gone to the University of McDonald's.
But also the crucially thing is that the other place that's come up with a degree course for its staff is Harrods, which is with ARU right here in Cambridge.
They do M snobbery. you're required that they just have you like in a sort of a shooting gallery, but all the pictures are of poor people, and when they turn around you had to say something a little bit derisory. They turn around and you go TK Maxx. I should only expect as much.
There we go. This is Chris Moten's class snobbery.
That was my parody of Harrod's class snobbery.
Fair enough.
It happens to match my own class snobbery, but I'd like you to feel, I'd like you to be quiet about the matter.
And the final story here today, the fake Taliban leader turned out to just basically be what they think now is a shopkeeper who was claiming to be the second highest official in the Taliban. And he fooled NATO, and yeah, people were trying to get him to just broker a peace.
Ah, see, what the bit we haven't heard about this story is that he also did the same thing to the Taliban. is that they were actually sort of sat there and, you know, Jim the Talibanista nudged Ben the Talibanista, because that's the names they have in the Middle East, and said, that doesn't look like Dave the King of the Taliban. And he's like, no, it doesn't. Dave has changed a bit. Let's test him. Hey, Dave, what do you think about NATO? And he went, I don't like him very much. And they went, yeah, you know, fair dues. His face and voice have changed, but he's still our Dave. And vice versa at the NATO side. Yeah. He's just been running back and forth. It's a sort of a bit of a 19th century farce there.
But that's all we've got time for. And I'm going to quickly predict news for next week, which is that there'll be lots of doom and gloom to balance out all the nice stories of milk and human kindness we had this week.
And the continued cold will cause notable items to freeze solid and break, like, say, Big Ben, for example. That's the bell, damn it. The tower at Parliament. Will become brittle enough and break off, and we'll be sailing it down the Thames by the end of next week.
Thank you very much, and good night.